After 20 years, $1 trillion spent training and equipping hundreds of thousands of Afghan national security and defense forces, 2,448 Americans killed, 20,722 more wounded, and untold thousands coming home with unseen trauma to their mental health. I will not send another generation of Americans to war in Afghanistan with no reasonable expectation of achieving a different outcome.
That was President Joe Biden addressing the nation yesterday, announcing that the U.S. mission in Afghanistan will end by August 31st. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and that is how our nation's longest war will come to an end. You may understandably have some feelings about this morning, and we would invite you to join our conversation. 1-800-642-1234 is a number to the studio. You can email us ideas@WPR.org. Our guest this morning is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia Program. She leads the organization's research, analysis, and policy advocacy about and in the region. She was also the acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. Department of State, and prior to that, principal deputy special representative. Laurel Miller, thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Ideas Network.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Please, what did you hear yesterday from the president, and what does that portend for what's next from your perspective?
Well, I think what we've been hearing from the president ever since he announced in April his decision to completely withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan is that, first of all, he's made a very definitive decision that those forces are going to be withdrawn. And indeed, the withdrawal is almost entirely complete as of now. He is also basically saying the U.S. has higher priorities in the world, and that what happens next in Afghanistan is not very important to U.S. national security interests. That's the main message. I mean, he's been quite direct about it, more direct than other U.S. officials who've tried to soften the blow of that message as received by Afghans and other countries in the region. But what the president has said is that competition with China, the COVID crisis, climate change, cybersecurity, those are specific points that he mentioned yesterday, are all more important priorities looking ahead than Afghanistan is. And he's done with it.
And he reiterated two points, that the mission in Afghanistan, we can bring the troops home now without saying, mission accomplished, because we attained our two goals. Osama bin Laden was killed, and he said that, the threat to the U.S. homeland no longer comes from Afghanistan, the organized threat to the U.S. Mm-hmm. homeland. But at the same time, he wouldn't really pin anything down yesterday either, would he?
Right. That was a bit of a muddled message in my view, because he did say that the U.S. achieved its objectives in Afghanistan 10 years ago. He said that the original reason for going into Afghanistan was to get Osama bin Laden and to decimate al-Qaeda, and that those objectives were achieved 10 years ago. Then when asked by a reporter whether you're declaring mission accomplished, he said no, but he had seemed to have said the mission, as he defined it, was accomplished 10 years ago, and really resisted answering the question, then what were the last 10 years about? He also, I think, expressed a bit too much confidence in how the Afghan government forces are going to be able to handle the security situation in Afghanistan going ahead. He quite rightly pointed to the very substantial investment that the United States put into building up Afghan government security capabilities. But there are a lot of problems with the Afghan government forces, and at the moment, they are not doing well vis-a-vis the Taliban. And so the confidence he expressed in their ability to hold together the Afghan state, to prevent a Taliban takeover of the country, I think was it was more confident than I and other analysts of the situation would be in estimating what's likely to happen ahead. I think another thing that's important to mention that wasn't mentioned by the president yesterday is it was a little bit of a selective history of what the U.S. did when it went into Afghanistan. It is absolutely true, as he said, that the U.S. invasion was, of course, sparked by the 9/11 attacks and the U.S. Decision to go after the al-Qaeda leadership. But that wasn't the only decision that the U.S. made in 2001. It decided, the Bush administration decided, that it wasn't going to be sufficient to just go after the terrorists, to chase the perpetrators, and to take what was at that time derided as a law enforcement approach to counterterrorism, where you go after the perpetrators and you bring them to justice. What the Bush administration decided was that it also had to change the regime in Afghanistan, that because the Taliban had harbored al-Qaeda and the leadership wouldn't turn him over, that the Taliban regime that was governing Afghanistan at the time had to be overthrown. And that was necessary in the Bush administration's judgment because they a message had to be sent to other countries and governments around the world that might be inclined to harbor terrorist groups about what the consequences would be of doing that. And so it was really two separate missions that the U.S. set for itself going into Afghanistan. One was going after bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and the other was displacing the Taliban, which means setting up something in its place, a new government, a new system, and that means nation building. So what the president said yesterday was that the U.S. didn't go into Afghanistan to do nation building, but in fact, it did. the U.S., the Bush administration decided that it was a dual mission. It was the regime change mission and it was the going after al-Qaeda mission. And the regime change mission and all that comes from that, all the consequences that flow from that turned out to be much, much harder than was anticipated at the time. And then at the same time, you had the Taliban regroup as an insurgency a few years later and pose a steadily growing threat to the system that we set up. So, you know, it's fair to take the view that that was a mistake on the part of the Bush administration. And it can, you know, be argued that that mission was too hard and no longer necessary for U.S. security interests, the preventing the Taliban from governing Afghanistan mission. But the fact is that there were these two separate missions, only one of which was achieved 10 years ago, as the president described. And what his decision really means, his decision to pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan really means that what was decided in 2001, that Taliban rule of Afghanistan was intolerable to the United States, no longer holds, and that U.S. policy is now, 20 years later, that although undesirable, Taliban potential rule of Afghanistan is tolerable.
It was brought up yesterday during the press conference. And yeah. Laurel Miller, I got to take a break there, but we will continue the conversation with you as well as any questions you might have or statements you might want to make about America's longest war and its end. Laurel Miller is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia Program, and she was also the acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. Department of State. What questions might you have for her this morning in the future of Afghanistan, the Taliban, and U.S. foreign policy? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Politico reports there are currently 600 troops left in Afghanistan, mostly Marine Corps and Army personnel. According to CNN, the last U.S. troops left Bagram Air Base last week. That was once the center of American military might in that country. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and earlier this week, Taliban commanders were showing off their cash after taking over a military base in a province next to Kabul, including 900 guns and 20 Army pickup trucks. That story's from Sky News. So how do you size up America's foreign policy, and how would you assess our homeland security as we get set to wrap up America's longest war? And for that matter, how can we be smarter about how we deploy those who choose to serve? Join us, 1-800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel Miller is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia program. She was also the acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. Department of State. And how would you assess Afghanistan's stability going forward, Laurel?
Well, there's a lot to be worried about on the part of Afghans and for people who are concerned about the situation in Afghanistan. I think it's highly likely that we're going to see an intensified and perhaps protracted civil war in the country. What we see right now is the Taliban taking advantage of the U.S. military withdrawal to try to press their military advantage. They have made significant gains in the last couple of months on the battlefield, and they're poised to make more gains on the battlefield, taking over more territory within the country. This is also in combination with the U.S. withdrawal. The Taliban advance has also had a pretty negative effect on the morale of Afghan security forces, some of whom are deserting, some who are fleeing the country, some who are simply laying down their arms and surrendering to the Taliban. And the Taliban also has a kind of political strategy, too, of negotiating local deals with local elders to try to gain territory and to succeed in gaining some territory even without fighting in some areas. So they are very confident right now. The Afghan government forces are experiencing the sort of equal and opposite sentiments. And this does not mean that the Taliban is necessarily going to rapidly take over the entire country, including urban areas, which they have not so far in this war taken and held. But they are surely going to try. And the only question in my mind is how protracted is this conflict? And I guess there are two questions. How protracted will this intensified phase of war be? But also, are the Taliban going to try to go all the way in achieving an outright military victory? Or are they only going to go so far as they judge they need to in order to then go to the bargaining table and negotiate terms for some kind of political accommodation other Afghans?
Yeah, let me stop you there. Did you by chance yesterday hear the president allude to the possibility of something akin towards a two-state solution in Afghanistan?
That was a bit confusing, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
He made a reference to Afghanistan never being a single unified country in its history, which is actually historically inaccurate. There is no prospect of Afghans, of the Taliban or their opponents agreeing to a division of territory in Afghanistan. That is not in the cards at all.
But he seemed to allude to that yesterday, didn't he?
He did. And I honestly can't tell you where that idea came from.
Okay.
There is some possibility that in the end game in Afghanistan, that the Taliban and other Afghan power brokers reach some accommodation on some form of power sharing in the country. But that's not a territorial division.
I want to get a couple of calls in here if we can.
Sure.
And get some perspective from those who are listening at 1-800-642-1234, their feelings and assessment of our homeland security, our foreign policy, and what we take after 20 years of war in Afghanistan. And we'll start with Spencer and Eau Claire this morning. Spencer, good morning. You're on the morning show with Laurel Miller.
Good morning.
Hi.
So my question for Laurel was, How does she view the $61 billion Belt and Road Initiative that China's making in Afghanistan and how that's going to affect the region's stability?
Interesting. Laurel?
Yeah, interesting question. So China's Belt and Road Initiative, for those who aren't familiar with it, is its effort to build physical and sometimes virtual, but a lot of physical connectivity with countries throughout Asia. It's billed as being a kind of win-win approach to providing development assistance for these countries that need development assistance, while at the same time enabling trade routes in and out of China. Of course, a lot of people think it's not exactly win-win on equal terms and is crafted in a way that's more to China's benefit than it is to those of the countries it engages with. It has a huge investment in Pakistan next door to Afghanistan. And that is really the kind of flagship of the Belt and Road Initiative. The Belt and Road Initiative includes a lot of different countries, but it has a big, big investment in connectivity between China and Pakistan, much less with Afghanistan. China has been cautious in its investments with Afghanistan because of the instability there. So it might be interested in the future in building up that network with Afghanistan, but it's not there yet. And, you know, there are mixed views on what China is doing. And to some extent, it is providing real development assistance to these countries. And, you know, they're not foolish for being willing to have those connections with China, which is in their neighborhood. But how this is going to work out for some of these countries for the long term, given that China is in it for its own interests, is less clear.
Laurel Miller is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia Program. She leads the organization's research, analysis, and policy advocacy about and in the region. She was also the acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. Department of State, and prior to that, principal deputy special representative. So we're lucky to have her this hour, and she's taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234. We're Michael and Elroy standing by. Michael, good morning. You're on the air with Laurel Miller.
Well, thank you very much. Great topic, as usual. I'm just curious to know, since we poured all these billions of dollars in American lives into support for the Afghanis, who's supporting the Taliban, please?
Laurel.
That's an excellent and important question. The Taliban have, most importantly, over these 20 years, had support from Pakistan. Their leadership fled to Pakistan after the U.S. invasion in 2001, and that's where they were able to regroup as an insurgency. There has also been material support for the Taliban from Pakistan, but probably most importantly is that the Taliban leadership and fighters have had safe haven in Pakistan, which has enabled them to fight as well as they have in the insurgency. The Taliban have gotten support from other countries too. They've been able to do fundraising in some of the Persian Gulf countries, like the United Arab Emirates and some others. They've gotten what's probably smaller degrees of assistance from Iran, but that has been a growing relationship, and probably even smaller degrees of assistance from Russia and China, which really is more just kind of greasing the wheels of relationships with those countries, not trying to help them necessarily win in as against the Afghan government. A lot of countries sort of hedge their bets by providing some support to both sides, but Pakistan has been most important. But the Taliban has also been able to raise a lot of money within Afghanistan. They've done that by you know, what they call taxation of the population, but others would call predatory behavior and extortion, and by involvement in the narcotics trade in Afghanistan, and other means from, you know, raising revenue within. And then they've also, you know, a lot of the weapons and material they've used is ultimately comes from the U.S. because they capture vehicles, weapons, ammunition every time they have an engagement, a successful engagement with the government security forces.
Laurel Miller is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia Program. She leads the organization's research, analysis, and policy advocacy about and in the region. She was also the acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. Department of State. So what questions might you have for her about America's longest war? Or what would you like to share about what it means to be wrapping up America's longest war and where we stand today on the side of personal safety, homeland security? We'll take your calls after the news at 1-800-642-1234 and continue to dig into the details about what it means for you and me in U.S. foreign policy, the end of the war in Afghanistan by the end of August. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show from the Ideas Network. Women in northern and central Afghanistan are marching in the streets and posting pictures of themselves with assault rifles on social media. As the Taliban regains territory, The Guardian reports that these women remain defiant, but outnumbered. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And the first question President Biden was asked yesterday was about the resurging Taliban.
No. Is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan now inevitable?
No, it is not.
Why?
Because you have the Afghan troops have 300,000 well-equipped as any army in the world, and an air force, against something like 75,000 Taliban. It is not inevitable.
So then what were the spoils of this war? Is it really over? And if not, then what next? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation this hour with our guest, Laurel Miller, from the International Crisis Group's Asia Program, also a former acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan in the U.S. State Department. Let's go to George in Monroe this morning. George, good morning. You're on the air with Laurel Miller.
Hi. I'm wondering if the guest could tell us what she would be doing and what her policy would be going forward. It's pretty easy to look back to 20 years and say we're inconsistent with the mission we declared then, but that was a stupid move 20 years ago. And it's we've been pounding ourselves with the same policy for 20 years. I think Biden could have said one thing: not one more American generation is going to be sacrificed for Afghanistan. You know, the British couldn't do it, the Russians couldn't do it, we couldn't do it. It's just stupid, and it's time to stop. And I get it that there's going to be a horrible fallout in Afghanistan. But, you know, at some point, there's some things we can't fix. You know, get the translators, get them out of there. They put themselves on the line for us. Bring them over here, and let's go home, period.
George, thank you for the call. Laurel Miller, it's not difficult to lay out what we've lost over these 20 years in this war, but can you compare that or assess that against what we've gained?
Yeah. You know, first of all, I want to say that the comments that the caller just made, I mean, that lays out a perfectly rational policy position. And I think that's very much in line with what President Biden decided and why he decided it. It's, you know, I don't want to be mistaken as suggesting that I think the U.S. should have just kept fighting the war perpetually in Afghanistan. I do think it's right and proper for the U.S. leaders to be making decisions in accordance with U.S. national security interests. I do have concerns about some of the ways that this policy has been executed in that I think some of the aspects of the withdrawal, including the question of getting the interpreters out in time, were not as thought through as they could have been. And I'm somewhat surprised that there hasn't been, before the decision to withdraw was made, a clearer set of options developed as to how to deal with the continuing risks from terrorist groups in the region. There's a bit of catch-up going on that now. At the same time, when you look at what are the threats to the United States and how do they compare today to how they were in 2001, it's not just a question of what's going on over there in Afghanistan or elsewhere. It's a question of what has gone on here in hardening homeland defenses, which is quite different today than it was in 2001 and has lowered the risks considerably. So, you know, I think there have been a lot of mistakes over the years in Afghanistan, including that not enough effort was put into trying to forge a political solution to the war years ago when the U.S. had more influence to try to do that. But it's clear that Biden inherited a situation that left him without very many good options. You know, I think it's a decision that you really, you could have made a sound argument either way. You could have said it's time to just fold up your tents and go home. Or you could have said, in recent years, the risks to American service members in Afghanistan have been extremely low, and keeping a relatively small number there has had the effect of preventing the defeat of the Afghan government and preventing the Taliban to come back to power. You pulled them out and, you know, you've let the plug out of the drain.
Well, as I understand it, we had an agreement with the Taliban last year to withdraw from former President Trump, an agreement yeah. with the Taliban to withdraw. It was earlier this year, I believe, in May. And since that agreement, I believe we haven't had U.S. casualties on the ground dating back to February of last year for the military.
Even before that, I mean, the U.S. was not directly engaged in combat with the Taliban. So it is true that the Taliban explicitly adopted a policy of not going after U.S. forces after the U.S. signed an agreement with the Taliban in February 2020, agreeing to withdraw forces. But even before that, the risks to U.S. forces were quite low in Afghanistan. I mean, you know, it's if the U.S. had not kept to that deal that it signed with the Taliban to withdraw U.S. forces this year, and, you know, we sort of missed the deadline by a couple of months, but close enough, then it's true that the Taliban would have torn up the deal too and would have declared that they were back at war with the United States. But that doesn't mean that U.S. forces couldn't have protected themselves there. I don't think that Biden stuck with that deal that was signed with the Taliban because of a belief in the importance of, you know, of sticking with pieces of paper that you sign. I think it's because he judged that it wasn't worth keeping U.S. forces in Afghanistan for U.S. national security interests. I mean, this was not an international treaty. It was not legally binding. It was an agreement that the government of the United States of America signed with a non-state insurgent group. That's not, that's a far, far cry from, you know,
not a
breaking
treaty.
An international treaty.
Right. Laura Miller is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia program. She was also the acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. State Department. If you have questions for her, our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. President Biden was asked about the parallels to wars in the past yesterday, Laurel, and he said this was not another Vietnam because we will not see the fall of the U.S. embassy in Saigon like we did in 1975. But is there an argument to be made that U.S. foreign policy failed to learn from its own history?
Yes. And I mean, there are a lot of reasons why Afghanistan's not a parallel to Vietnam, but I wouldn't call that point out as not being the parallel. I mean, we won't see helicopters, on the roofs of the American embassy, because if there is that kind of threat to the American embassy in this day and age, you're going to pull out the diplomats before you get to that stage. That's the reason why we're not going to see that scenario. Doesn't mean that I think the embassy is in an extremely tenuous position in Afghanistan, and I'm not confident it will still be open a year from now. But, you know, one of the main lessons is, I thought we learned in Vietnam that it's very difficult to win a counterinsurgency fight in someone else's country. But we tried it again in Afghanistan. And for all the successes that there have been on the counterterrorism front in Afghanistan, it has to be said, we did not win the counterinsurgency against the Taliban. They were ousted. They were defeated in 2001. They then regrouped and they gained strength steadily over the years until now. And the U.S. is leaving with the Taliban at its strongest point since 2001.
Let's take a moment to talk about some of the other nations and how they are impacted by America's longest war. What about our NATO allies and what comes next for them?
Yeah, you know, our NATO allies, I mean, they may have invested less than the United States, but relative to their own defense budgets and their norms of deployment of forces abroad, this was a huge commitment for them too. And proportionally to their deployments, they lost as many soldiers as the United States did in Afghanistan. Germany made a huge commitment. The UK, also in lesser numbers, Italy and Turkey and some others in smaller numbers. And, you know, it's, if it's a failure for the United States, it's a failure for them too. And this is something that I'm sure is going to be closely examined by their parliaments. And there's going to be, you know, a lot of lessons to learn here. I think perhaps including the lesson of when do we follow the United States and when don't we? The only reason that our NATO allies went into Afghanistan is because the United States went into Afghanistan and asked them to join us in that endeavor. They weren't the ones who were attacked on 9/11. We were the ones who were attacked on 9/11. They were there because of us, and we wanted them to be there with us. Rationally, this would then raise questions about, you know, how closely do we follow the U.S. in our foreign and defense policy?
Laurel Miller is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia Program. She was also the acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. State Department. And we have about 14 minutes left with her in our conversation on the end of America's longest war. Your calls at 1-800-642-1234. Still time for you in our conversation. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Our former National Security Advisor, author of Dereliction of Duty, and retired three-star Army General H.R. McMaster took to Twitter yesterday to say that it was the U.S. media's disinterest and defeatism, using his words here, quote, helped set conditions for capitulation and a human catastrophe in Afghanistan. McMaster also served as deputy to the commander for planning of the International Security Assistance Force in Afghanistan. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest had something to say about that on Twitter yesterday. And one senior advisor to a former commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan wrote in Politico this week that he started asking himself how we lost this war way back in 2009. So what can you say about what we've gained these last 20 years? What are you willing to admit that we've lost? And what's it all mean for the simple reason we started this war in the first place? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation with our guest, Laurel Miller, director of the International Crisis Group's Asia Program and former acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. State Department. And Laurel, where does U.S. foreign policy go from here? As you mentioned, NATO allies questioning, you know, to what degree they'll sidle
saddle up to the United States in the years to come as a potential result of the last 20 years in Afghanistan. What does our foreign policy look like at the end of August and start of September?
Well, for Afghanistan, it's quite unclear to me what the U.S. policy is going to be going ahead. What the U.S. has said is that it's going to continue to provide financial support to the Afghan government and Afghan government security forces. But, you know, money is not a policy. Money is just a means for implementing a policy. The policy that is evidenced by the decision to withdraw and by everything that President Biden has said so far is that Afghanistan is not a high priority, and that although we would prefer to see the government continue in place and the Taliban not achieve a victory, we're not actually going to do anything to ensure that outcome. He's also stressed the importance of the role of governments in the region, Pakistan, Russia, China, Iran, in ensuring outcomes in Afghanistan that produce stability rather than chaos and more war. And, you know, it's true that those countries have a great deal at stake in Afghanistan, in some respects more at stake than the U.S. does, and can play, if they choose to, a helpful role in promoting stability there by trying to get the Taliban and the Afghan government forces and the Afghan government to come to some kind of political settlement. But that's going to be very difficult for those governments to do. They don't naturally all cooperate with each other. They have their separate interests. And by stressing publicly the role of these governments in the region, it's a way of saying, over to you, others. We're not really going to be in the lead on this anymore. Others will need to take the lead, and Afghans themselves will need to find their own solutions. And so, you know, that's not really much of a policy that I can see. I think there could be some hard questions.
Yeah, is wait and
it's
see
a wait and see.
Yeah,
I think it is.
Laurel, we had Tom from Port Washington call. He couldn't stay with us, but he wanted to ask about, and you've connected the dots here. You wanted to ask about the possibility of U.S. forces reentering Afghanistan at some point.
That's a really good question. I think the bar is going to be very high for doing that after U.S. forces exiting. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine any reversal of this withdrawal decision, even with small deployments intermittently, unless there is a terrorist attack on U.S. interests that is linked to Afghanistan. Because the decision taken already means that we're not going to intervene in what happens vis-a-vis the Taliban, or between the Taliban and the Afghan government. The U.S. has made it clear that whatever happens there in that fight happens. If there were a terrorist attack somewhere against the United States or a close European ally that was clearly linked to Afghanistan, maybe that would be a reason for perhaps a small, you know, limited term deployment of special forces into Afghanistan. But I don't see any prospect on the horizon of a reinvasion.
Laurel Miller was the acting special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan at the U.S. State Department, and she is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia Program. And still time for you at 1-800-642-1234, where Dave is standing by. Dave, good morning. You're on the air with Laurel Miller.
Hello.
Hi.
I heard the president throw a bunch of numbers at us about 300,000 troops or whatever in the Air Force. If they can't hold back the Taliban with 20 years of American support, how can anybody believe they're going to do it alone?
Well, that's a good question. Also, those numbers were, although not technically inaccurate, misleading, because the 300,000 number is not actually the total number of fighting forces. That includes police, and it includes, some support elements. It's not 300,000 fighters. When you really boil it down to the number of fighters on the Afghan government side, it's closer to parity with the Taliban. And of course, also no one actually knows how many forces the Taliban has. These are very soft estimates. It is true that the Afghan government has an air force, which the Taliban doesn't, and that's a comparative advantage they have. But on the other hand, an insurgency has a lot of natural advantages of being able to pick and choose the time and place of their advances without having to, you know, hold all territory everywhere. It's going to be a tough fight. And you're absolutely right. If things are as bad as they are now, when they have U.S. air support and other kinds of support, there's no reason to think that it's not going to get worse when that's all gone.
One of the stories over these last 20 years in our ongoing wars has been U.S. contractors, military contractors, and numbers that don't necessarily show up in casualty mm-hmm. counts of our troops. What about the use of contractors and mercenaries going forward in Afghanistan?
Well, that would be, I mean, there's a difference between contractors who are providing support functions like maintenance of aircraft, logistics systems, et cetera, and contractors who are security actors, more like mercenaries. There have been a lot of, I mean, contractors have greatly outnumbered the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan over time, but it's been in this sort of support functions basket. There has not been the use of more mercenary-like contractors in Afghanistan. It's a terrible idea. I mean, that's not anything that anyone's discussing now as an alternative to U.S. forces in Afghanistan. They would be unaccountable. They would be, a greater threat than they would be to security in Afghanistan, then they would be a means of imposing security on Afghanistan.
And Laurel, with the we've got a few minutes left here, but I do want to ask about what this does to our U.S. armed forces after America's longest war. Where are our armed forces?
Well, I think there's going to have to be a lot of soul searching about the strategic errors in Afghanistan, what went wrong, a lot of lessons learned. As you pointed out at the top, there have been a huge number of American service members who have, including throughout the officer corps, who have served there not just once, but multiple times. And this is going to have a deep impact on how the U.S. military thinks about its strategy, thinks about its tactics, thinks about where and when force should be used and how it's used in a way that I think it won't really touch the American public at large, but will deeply imprint the American military for generations.
Do you see hope in the future? And if so, where?
I don't feel very hopeful for Afghanistan itself. I think there's going to be a real rough time ahead. It's the end of America's longest war, but it's by no means the end of a very long war in Afghanistan. And I feel for the people of Afghanistan. I mean, regardless of whether you think that the U.S. does or doesn't have any responsibility to Afghans because of the promises that it did make, that maybe it never intended to keep, but that Afghans relied on about U.S., enduring commitment. Let's at least spare a thought for the Afghans who have a lot of suffering ahead.
Laurel Miller, thank you so much for this hour.
Thank you very much for having me.
Laurel Miller is the director of the International Crisis Group's Asia Program. She leads the organization's research, analysis, and policy advocacy about and in the region. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.